Now, live on WBCN Boston from Fort Apache Studios in Cambridge, David Bowie.
WBCN Boston, yes, this is a big deal. I'm Bradley J, and I'd like to welcome all of you at home and all of you in our studio audience. This is one of the greatest moments in really the history of BCN. It's one of the highlights. What happened was David Bowie put out a new album. We love it. And we thought, we don't just want to play the record. We want to, like, get to know the guy who put the record together finally after all this time. So what we did was we said, hey, everybody, fax, email, write in your favorite questions, and we chose some questions, and you people in this studio are the cream of the Bowie fan crop. But that is not to diminish all of you who are freaks at home as well. It was very difficult to choose the questions, so if your question did not get chosen, don't feel you are less of a person. We appreciate it. Let's have a round for all those people who could not make it. Okay. Okay, that's enough. They didn't make it after all. Not only do we get to talk to David, but we're going to get a performance, as you can see. Are you all, anybody nervous at all? Yeah, no kidding. I met him a bunch of times, and I still have the shakes. You think you'd get over it, but you don't. So let's bring him out here. Hi there, David. And here's Reeves. Let me just say a couple of things to David before he comes in. David, your generosity for coming out and doing this is not lost on us. We appreciate it. Now,
thank you very much. That's really lovely.
One quick question. You look... There we go. David looks great. You look great, and you look really like you must be very pleased with this new album. Is there anything that you're particularly pleased with Earthling?
The fact that Reese and I are here, this place means a lot to us, this studio in particular. He's worked with most of them, but a lot of the favorite guys from the 80s recorded here, and it's like a bit of a shrine, so this is really cool to be here.
Now, when it started out, you took Reese on because he was a good guitar player. But as I understand it, he's become sort of a sex symbol, and his guitar playing has started to slide. And you have to do overdubs in the studio.
I do most of the guitar work now, yeah. It's some guys have got it. Elvis had it, Jim Morrison, and Reeves, and it's...
Now, one of our listeners who I will give credit to now, I have to find out their name, but the question is appropriate now. Reeves and you seem to get along pretty well. What is the wildest, sort of funniest prank or joke that Reeves has played on you that you can think of?
Not the Tigger suit.
It taught me, without telling me, deaf and dumb language for various blasphemous things, and it encouraged me to use them on people that understood what they really meant.
All right. We'll get to some questions later while David and Reeves perform. I'm going to come down there, and we'll get some questions. But I'm going to get out of your way. What's that? You have, like, the index finger and the little finger up.
You know what that is?
Don't tell me. I don't know if I want to know.
This is the cleanest one of the lot. Isn't this cute? This means bullshit.
What? Uh-oh.
This is one that he learned from the Mute Lesbian Channel. I kid you not.
Oh, goodness. It looks like you're taking a football handoff, but moving your fingers. All right, I'm going down there and hook up with some of these people. I'm going to let you perform.
Alan's using it, no, I think.
What are we going to hear first? Do we know?
Alan. It's a topical joke.
Oh, television.
But he does look good, doesn't he?
I'm fine.
You can't be late for your gig tonight with Jeff and Jane Hudson.
Oh, man. You better not show up. Dude, I told the people, if you showed up at the gig, I would soil my Calvin Kleins, throw my guitar, and run and just run away. Especially if
we go back to the Sex Palace program.
Who's been talking to you? You guys. Are you going to perform first so I can get down there and we'll take some questions?
Yeah.
What are we going to hear first from Earthling, I imagine?
I have no idea.
Oh, man. You guys can just do that?
Yeah.
You can just do that? Just call them up? All right. David Bowie on WBCS.
This is a new variety. The interesting thing about taking some older songs and playing them acoustically is that if they're driven technically or whatever, when you take them down to their essentials, they really become something else. So this one, there's one music I promised Vowed, in fact, that I'd never play, and that was country and western. So I now have a chance to go back on that, and here's a country and western favorite. She had a heart of room, she was sad, Cadillac beast. When I looked in her eyes, they were blue, nobody home. She could have been a killer if she didn't walk the way she do. She opened strange doors that we've never closed again. She began to wail, jealousy scream, waiting at the lights. Know what I mean? Scary monsters, super creeps, keeps me running scared. Scary monsters, super creeps, keeps me running scared. Me to stay in a full moon. She asked for my love and I gave her a dangerous mind. Now she's stupid in the street and she can't socialize. Well, I love the little girl until the day she died. It was Jimmy's guitar sound, jealousy scream, waiting at the lights. Know what I mean? Scary monsters, super creeps, keeps me running scared. Scary monsters, super creeps, keeps me running scared.
Thank you. Thank you. Are you guys freaking out or what? Gee. What if we take a couple of questions from our audience now?
Sure, I'd love to, yeah.
All right. Let's have... Oh, it's Elise from... Where are you from, Elise?
From Winchester.
What's your question, Elise?
Beautiful cathedral you have there.
I must say, first of all, that you look absolutely marvelous.
Marvelous. Thank you very much. You look pretty good yourself.
Oh, thank you, David. Woo.
Pretty good line, huh?
Yeah. I've heard that you enjoy reading, and I'd like to know what you're reading right now and who your favorite authors are.
Okay. Right now, two things. They're both arty things. One's Life of Picasso, the second part by John Richardson. Second one is a really excellent biography of Marcel Duchamp, which just came out a few weeks ago. I think it's by somebody Campbell. I can't remember.
All right, really you did it. There for Elise. Good job, Elise. And who do we have here, sir?
Gil Irizarry.
Say it slower, please.
Gil Irizarry.
Gil, what's your question for Dave?
Still sounds bad. Dave.
I mean, you've been here, what? 5 minutes. And now you're Dave. Dave Gil. Gil Dave. How long did
he... I don't break words, Dave.
How long did it take for your eyebrows to grow back after Ziggy Stardust?
Who said they grew back? You know, I mean, how I did it, Ziggy came over here with eyebrows, and I think it was down in Florida we did a gig, and I got roaringly drunk the night before. And apparently, I cut one of the eyebrows off. And I woke up the next morning and realized the folly of my ways. And I had to kind of equal the situation, so I had to take the other one. But it was, it wasn't an intended thing. That's just a short footnote to that whole thing.
Speaking of Iggy, did you ever give any thought to perhaps doing a play based on the Iggy thing? Or musical?
Based on an eyebrow kind of thing.
Right.
I mean. It could be Kafka-esque. Couldn't it be? Could it be? Definitely not a rock musical, though, Bradley.
All right. We could do another song, or I could ask you another question.
There's a guy called Vince Taylor. That part of the Ziggy persona. Do you know about Vince Taylor?
No.
He was an American who had ambitions to be a kind of a Presley-esque character in the late 50s. And he couldn't make it here, kind of like P.J. Proby, who's another one of those kind of Elvis look-alike type guys. And they both came over to
England. Like Reeves.
Like kind of a Reeves thing, yeah. And Proby did very well in Britain. But Vince Taylor also bombed in Britain, so he ended up going to France. quite mad as a hatter, Vince. And he formed a band over there. One night, he walked out on stage dressed as Jesus and said, I won't be needing this band anymore. In fact, I won't be needing any of you, because I have places to go and a father to return to. And he became Christ. And... I met him once in London, and he took me down Oxford Street in London and opened up maps and put them on the pavement and showed me where all the UFOs were going to be landing shortly. And Vince kind of became a role model for the Ziggy type character. Well, the unsettling, Vince unfortunately is no longer with us. He died about 7 or 8 years ago. He ended up, this is very unsettling, as a maintenance man at Geneva Airport for Swiss Airlines. Not many people know that, Bradley.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm thinking this may be the best band David's ever had. You got Reeves here. I'm going to just ask you the basic, how'd you hook up with them? And I'd like to add this to the question, how has their function evolved during the time they spent? Like Reeves, we know he no longer plays as much and is more of a sex symbol, but how about Gail and Zach and those people? Where'd you find them?
That was a question, Reeves.
Oh, directed at me?
It's yours, I guess, Reeves.
I don't know, how'd you find them?
He was recommended to me.
I was thinking
it wasn't a terribly exciting story.
You know,
I was looking around for somebody. There was nobody else around except Reeves, and so I see no reason to go. I mean, it doesn't cost much to feed him or anything.
I'm sorry.
The clothing is starting to take over, though. I mean, the wardrobe expenses are becoming prohibitive. As you can see. Yeah.
Especially
right,
the folks
we have
at home.
Someone else, I believe. And who might you be, sir?
Paul Parcheski.
Paul, what's your question for David Bowie?
If you could go backward in time, what moment in history would you visit?
I think probably around between 1907 and
19, I want to miss the First World War. So let's about 1913, 1914, just around there. Probably that was the most exciting period, I think, in music and in art and everything.
Where would you be during that time?
Between Paris and London, mainly Paris, I think.
That's just as the Russian Revolution starting to get ready to happen.
That's right. Well, that was 1917, but you're not far out.
Okay. Anybody else?
David, if you had to leave this planet for another planet, what would, three things would you want to bring with you?
Boom.
Can we come back to that?
Yeah, let us think. Why don't you do a song and mull that one over and we'll get back to it.
That's a really tough question. What? Let's do another song. Okay, I should give this up.
The guitar
is a filthy habit.
If you do it right.
Are you okay?
Learn how to do it, it's not so bad, right, Wade?
Oh, okay.
Shot in the head, and I'm holding your brains. The old woman said, so we're drinking the shadows of an evening sky. I see nothing at all. I pray. Nothing ever goes away. I praise you. Nothing ever goes. I praise you. So special, the snow looks so old. A frail form is drifting beyond the yoga zone. Time to question the mountain where pigs can fly. It's nothing at all. Goes away. I praise you. Nothing ever goes. I praise you. goes away. I pray to you, nothing ever goes, nothing ever goes. That was a song called 7 Years in Tibet from the album Earthling.
You know, David and Reeves, when I listen to that song, I can't help feel but feel this sense of a loss. And I've heard you say briefly that it was about a loss. Can you talk about what?
Yeah, when I was very much younger, I was sort of a kind of a closet Buddhist for about 15 minutes anyway. 16 minutes? And I was very fortunate to meet a wonderful Tibetan Lama over in Britain who'd escaped the Chinese and was working at what was called the Tibet Society in London. And he took me on as a kind of a pupil for a while. Cut and move forward. Many, many years later, around a couple of years ago, the Dalai Lama was being very vocal in what's happening to his country and his people, and I got kind of prodded with guilt that I kind of knew about the situation such a long time ago and hadn't really taken a stance on it. So this song was really written in sort of defense of what's happening to the Tibetan people. And we've just done a song for a very good album. It's a compilation album called Tibetan Exile, which comes out, I think, in a few weeks' time. A lot of bands, I think Radiohead have done something, Annie Lennox. And the proceeds of that album go towards the exiles of Tibet. I just thought I'd let you know that. It's a good album.
Does anyone else have a question about the new album? Yes. Stand up for me. What's your name?
Janet.
Question is?
My question, well, first of all, I'd like to congratulate you on the new album. I think it's terrific.
Thank you very much.
My question is, typically, how long does it take you to write the lyrics for a song?
Seven. Seven, 8 minutes. No, I know why he's laughing.
Why are you laughing?
Sometimes it does take some of the songs. It's no more than 7 or 8 minutes. Believe me, it's just the way that I write things and the process that I. Some of the best things that I've written have taken less than that, and some, believe me, some things that I've taken enormous pains over for weeks, sometimes months, have turned out to be real dogs. It's so much to do with it's catching a moment of energy, you know, and I don't quite know what happens, but I think my Macintosh knows.
All right, I'm going to go take a chance here and ask a question myself, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, and you can laugh at me if it's a stupid question. But in the new album, Looking at the Satellites, I get this sense of a technologically driven sort of malaise, just click, click, click on the TV. And it seems like the same sort of sadness that Major Tom had in Ashes to Ashes, sort of the result of a technologically driven ego. And I'm wondering, is it the same sort of feeling that I should get?
Theatrical laugh. Ha!
And I'm still standing. I lived through that.
You get used to it after a while.
If you can survive a theatrical laugh, then you're a good man. Well, I think I'm not sure if I hold with the idea of that any kind of artwork needs to have an intention behind it. You know. However, there was some kind of motivation for that one, I guess. And it's something that I personally have carried with me all my life, which is feeling very unsettled and fairly ambiguous about
how autonomous we are as thinking entities, and how much we owe to some kind of higher power. I think everybody has these feelings, and there's some kind of connection that I've continually tried to make with many of my songs, and often using the hardware of science fiction in that kind of allegorical situation, where it merely becomes representative of the unknown. I think that particular song finds us in the somewhere between losing our religious identity, a kind of a collapse, there's kind of a lack of belief now in maybe our orthodox religions. If they don't have the power, they seem to be archaic. They seem to hold a message that doesn't apply to this late part of the 20th century. And yet a real sense of awe and fright about where we're taking ourselves with the technological future. So we're not quite sure which of those two poles to be drawn toward. So I think we're sort of vacillating somewhere in the middle. It's not any kind of answer or any kind of conclusion. I think the job of the artist is to pose even more ridiculous, complex questions than we already have.
Now we have. Thank you.
See.
We have a limited time, and I'll let you guys make the call as to whether you'd like to make it more music intensive or talk a little bit more. If we want to squeeze in four,
we have a way of doing both at once.
All right. So the audience will sing, and you guys will play.
Well, I'm sort of getting tired of talking myself.
Yeah. All right. You've been setting a blistering pace up there, Reed. I can see where you'd be tired already. Okay.
He didn't employ the royal we, though. We are getting tired of talking, Dave.
It didn't used to be like this, Reeves.
Okay, very quick story. This matches your Johnny Marr story, right? Johnny Marr gave him a riff once. Ooh. And what did you do with it? You put it in a tin machine, so... Give him a riff, the first thing he does is break it. Well, this is one that about 30 years ago Jimmy Page gave to me. It was a recording session, so I used that for a song called The Superman. When all the world was very young, mountain magic, heavy hung, the Superman with walking fire, guardians of us, like that. And then I passed this baton of motif on to Mr. Gabrels, and we wrote this one around. His head tears his eyes from the screen as his past puts him back in Atlantic City. There's not even a demon in heaven or hell. Is it all just human disguise as I walk down the aisle? And I'm gone, gone, gone. Now I'm older than movies, and I know who's there when the silhouettes fall. And I'm gone like I'm dancing on angels. And I'm gone through the crack in the past, like a dead man walking. Like a dead man walking. Uh-huh. 3 old men dancing under the lamplight, shaking their sex and their bones, and the boys that we were. An alien nation in therapy,
sliding naked in you. Like a bad-tempered child on a rain-slick street. And I'm gone. Now I'm older than movies. And I know who's there when the silhouettes fall. And I'm gone, like I'm dancing on angels. And I'm gone, through the crack in the past, like a dead man walking. Like a dead man walking. Like a dead man. Dead man. Dead man. And I know who's there when silhouettes fall. And I'm gone, like I'm dancing on angels. And I'm gone, through the crack in the past, like a dead man walking. Like a dead man walking. Like a dead man.
Thank you. Also from the Earthling album.
Dead Man Walking, that's from Earthling. If you don't have the album yet out in the BCN audience, I know you guys all have it for sure, but if you don't have it out there, everyone should get it, and then we'll all come to my house after for a big Bowie party. All right. Dead Man Walking, I've heard, I've read that it owes a lot to Neil Young in the time you saw Neil Young.
Yeah, finally, the irony, of course, is that I've been a long-time admirer of the actress Susan Sarandon, and it kind of started off as a pay-on or an homage to her, and through some twisted way, it turned into a kind of an indebtedness to Neil Young. We did a benefit thing for the Bridge Foundation that he runs over in San Francisco. And it was watching Neil working one night with two or three members of Crazy Horse. And there was, there's a certain sage-like dignity to the way he carries himself on stage and the way he, there's a sanctity with what he does. There's a grace to it all. And I just thought it was very moving. And the moon is out. And there's just something very kind of ageless about this whole thing. And you're seeing an older group of guys performing with a certain energy of rock, but an imparted wisdom and poignancy that you kind of recognize when you're joining that age group yourself. And
what is that like?
Well, how about that?
Mr. Bowie has just given Mr. Gabrels the finger. Yes, sir, what's your name?
Shane Highlander.
Hi, Shane.
What's your question?
Hey, Dave.
Hiya.
If it were announced that in 1 week a massive and nasty asteroid would smash into Earth, killing us Earthlings, how would you spend your last week?
Whew. Apologizing, I think. Just in case.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi.
What's your name?
Heather.
Okay, Heather.
Hi. This must be a dream. This is not a deep or complex question. I was wondering, do you have any pets, and if so, what kind?
I had a dog once called Erdl von Spitzhausen, who was, believe it or not, he was a German shepherd. It's on a farm now because it started biting everybody. But gee, I love that dog. I like dogs a lot. I think they're really cool. Not little ones, big. I like big dogs, you know, proper dogs that children can get on the back and ride about the room with.
All right, what's your name?
Rachel. Hi, dude.
Hi, Rachel.
I want to say hi for all your internet fans, too. I know you have a big community.
Yeah. Cool.
I wondered, what is your favorite version of one of your songs done by another artist?
There's one that I heard not too long ago, which I really like. Dr. Dre did a version of Fame, which is just beyond belief, and it's really very cool. But that's a new one. There's a guy, you probably know, Puffy Coombs. He's done a version of, it's not out yet, but he played it to me the other week, of Let's Dance, and it's called Goodfellows, and it's pretty heavy. It's great. It's a great, great reworking. There have been quite a few, actually. I like very much. I think it's, honestly, in a way, it's the luggage of the times, but I really appreciated the Nirvana version of Man Who Sold the World, naturally.
On this, the anniversary, I believe, of that sad event. Yeah. Speaking of the internet, on the outside web page, last I found, there was the Nathan Adler story to be continued.
That's right.
What has happened to Nathan? Do we know? Have you heard anything?
Yeah, he went back to the 18th century and joined a pirate ship of drag queens. Just off.
So we'll be hearing from Nathan.
You want to hear a little bit about it?
Yeah.
There was.
Okay.
I wish. Let me see. Where to begin? Sydney Raffles, who is the man who virtually discovered Malaysia and Singapore back in the 1700s, when he first got there, found a bunch of thugs to accompany him, who were his bodyguard, and they were very well-known pirates. They were called the Boogies. Tribe called the Boogies, and the Boogies were pretty well known to the British and the other sailors in that particular time, because they would drag up when they were sailing their ships. They would dress as women and stand by the side of their ship, and the British ships would be looking over and saying, "Do you see what I see, Ernest? My God, a whole ship full of girls, sir." And like the fools they were, they would draw up alongside the ship, and of course the Boogies would take their grappling hooks over, come over, kill everybody on board and take everything. So they made a first-class and interesting bodyguard. And they served Raffles very well. They helped him build Singapore. And in return, as a gift, he gave them a street and an area in Singapore called Boogie Street, which became, of course, the great sex change street of the East,
of course,
eventually. And it's where we got the term the boogeyman, won't you? Comes from there. So anyway, somehow or other, Nathan Adler finds himself back in those times on the next album.
Young lady, we'll take you first. What's your name?
My name is Rachel Marks, and I'm going to be 18 tomorrow, and I'm from Wayland.
And I'm Rachel's best friend, Mare.
We're your biggest fans in the
entire. Do you have a question?
Mr. Bowie, can I ask you if I can ask two questions? One quick one, a yes or no. Okay.
So that was your question. All right, thank you very much. On the meanest.
Okay. Gone.
Did you get our David Bowie Bible that we sent with Steve from Cranking Out to you?
I did. Thank you very much.
Yes!
Is that yours?
You got it!
That's very nice.
Happy birthday from last year.
Not everything in it's true, by the way.
Okay. Well, no, we know that. And then my real question for my real question for winning was why do you spend so much time in America? Why?
Why do you spend so
Will
much time?
Will I have a problem with that?
Not at all. Not at all.
But let me tell you, I love America. What I love about it is everything that corporate and establishment America hates, and that's, I love its pioneering spirit, I love its rebels, I love the way that it abuses the system. It was the Jimmy Deans and the American Blues and the Beatniks and dear departed Allen Ginsberg and all those people that meant so much to me, and it's everything that the establishment seems to despise, and it's such a shame, because that for me is the real backbone of America. What makes it so great is its sense of rebelliousness.
Yes, sir.
Is there anything on my nose, Reeves? It wasn't meant to sound quite so...
One more question, and I'd love to hear another song, so I don't want to talk the whole time, but sir, what's your name?
My name is Peter. I'm from Cape Cod. Professor Bowie, I was wondering... I play golf, and I find that the golf swing is a form of art, and I was wondering if you find art in other things in life that people normally don't.
I didn't quite catch the last tag of the question.
Do you find art in other forms of life? Like, what other things, types of art are you interested in? That?
Yeah, I mean, if you take art as being, if you take it in its late 20th century sense, which is the provocation of an idea rather than the representation of what life is supposed to look or feel like, yeah, I think you can, if you have art, if you mean art as a trigger, rather than serving an end purpose, I think so many things in life, relationship with a person can trigger so many feelings within yourself that in itself can become an art form, no?
You mentioned golf. Do you play golf? Have you ever tried it out?
Do I play golf?
Golf is the answer. I can picture you and Reeves teeing up. Reeves is smoking a joint over in the corner. David hits blast. I've hit it into the rough.
Reeves and I have been training Reese's monkeys to play an acceptable round. It's
in your place.
It's been an extraordinary experiment.
A Hope and Crosby.
It's like a Hope and Crosby thing.
Can we get another song?
Yes, sure. I think okay. We can.
David Bowie on BCN.
Off to the city, strung out lasers, smashed back blazers, ate all the raisins, fell in the waiting, walking on Monroe, walking on Snow White, New York, San Diego, when everything tastes nice. On his back, James Heaton, that's in his stats, and he's outrageous, seems that he boasts. James Heaton, let yourself go. Sits like a man, but smiles like some reptile. She loves him, just for a short while. Scratching the sand, she let go of his hand. Says he's a beautician, sells you nutrition. Keeps all your dead hair for making up underwear.
Poor little Jane. Ooh, yeah.
Lives on his back. Jane, Jane, loves killing stacks. And he's outrageous, screams and bawls. Jane, Jane, lives
driver's module, lights on the neon, sleeps in a capsule, loves to be loved, loves to be loved.
Fan now, you are not able to speak. I am barely able to speak. I'd like to give a shot at a question to some of the people who are not fortunate enough to be here. And since that was a great acoustic version of that song, Sebastian from Chatsworth, California, that's what it says, asked, how do you...
Winston Churchill's house, wasn't it?
What are the chances of doing a whole acoustic album? Seems to give you a lot of freedom, really.
Very strong reason I have actually, I mean, there are many reasons for doing this show, but one of them primarily is that we're really getting into doing acoustic stuff. We really enjoyed it. I mean, for us, the benefit show for Neil was a real breakthrough. I used to do a lot of this stuff, seriously, 30 years ago. I started off doing clubs, just playing, you know, kind of guitar-y things. And I haven't done it since then. And it's really cool. I really enjoy it, you know.
Must be kind of fun not humping all that trucks full of gear around and just showing up with a guitar in your hand.
That's his problem. It's not
mine. Pack of cigarettes for Reeves.
I just bring a pair of tight trousers when I go.
I know. Those are very tight trousers, Reeves, and they're very revealing. I had no idea. Could you stand up, young lady? What is your question for David Bowie?
Hi, Reeves.
She obviously has seen the tight pants thing as well.
Do you think the Heroes Symphony is a good interpretation of your work, and would you ever consider writing a symphony of your own?
Phew, Philip Glass interpretation, yeah. Yeah. It's the second one he's done that he attempted low a couple of years ago, and he's just released Heroes. My honest feeling is that I think Heroes is a lot more successful than the low album that he did. I quite like that. I really like aspects of the new Heroes symphony. In answer to the second part of your question, Philip's asked me if I'll write with him a third symphony, so you know, it's a Sunday job for me, you know, symphony writing and that, so you know, get up, coffee, feed the rabbits, to the dog, take care of the wife, and write a symphony, you know. Television. Very high-minded kind of weekend.
You mentioned Low, and I have a question about Low. Joellen Saunders of Brighton asks... Hi, Joellen. You're here?
Hi.
It's too far over there, so let me ask it, okay? But it is a good question. From the Low album... The song Warzawa, after a long, beautiful instrumental, David Bowie sings in Polish, and then two women join in. What are they singing about? What are they singing?
Two women are singing, this is not two women, this is David Bowie. Well, firstly, I'm afraid I have to... Firstly, it wasn't Polish. It was just a series of sounds and syllables. I heard an album of Polish folk music, which I found so affecting. It really grabbed me. It's such a wonderful, wonderful mood. And having travelled to Warsaw, I put the two together, and with Brian, we created a little kind of almost an impressionistic piece of how Poland felt. And obviously, neither of us knew a thing about how to speak Polish, so I thought, well, I'll make it up. I'll make up Polish. So I wrote down sounds that I thought kind of sounded like Polish. And
and I've been, for the last 10 years, trying to figure those words out. I've been singing along with those words, trying to say, am I doing it right?
The strangest thing is I got a fan letter from Warsaw from one person who said that what I was saying in the song was absolutely right. But then went on to explain that he meant the mood of the music. So, and the two women were in fact me. And it weren't supposed to be women, it was supposed to be like a young contralto boys, you know, kind of, but never mind.
Too late now.
Too late now, yeah.
I've heard various versions of the story of Heroes, about the two lovers at the wall.
Yeah.
But I bet I got it wrong. Could you tell me the real story?
Yeah, there were a couple that used to meet daily by that wall, and one sort of, you know, fantasizes on why they meet there. This was in Berlin when the wall was still standing, of course, and we had a studio called Ufa that was just at the wall, so we were... And in fact, one of the daily routines was to play our mixes to the guards in the tower, just opposite us, and they go like... We got very good critique from these poor Russian guys, because they wouldn't allow Germans to occupy the towers, you know, in case they escaped, so they would have Russians in those towers, who still escaped anyway, because they weren't too happy with the situation. Every day a couple would meet there, and I just kind of thought, well, I wonder, you know, what if, you know, any sort of what if, and I just had the feeling that it was sort of an unrequited love affair and all that. It was all very hokey, you know, but out of the small seeds of... that kind of hokiness came something that was sort of really an extraordinary song, actually, for me, and it still has a resonance through the years, and I'm very proud of that song. I like it a lot.
David Bowie, Reeves Gabrels. We will never be able to thank you enough. It's a big deal. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Let's have a big hand. Come on. I know. Hopefully we can get another song from you, but I just want to say thank you very much. You guys are all excellent.
Thank you very much. You've been really great. We could have carried on forever. That's you've been great. This is a song from the band that really should have made their albums here, but never did. So it's kind of a fitting end thing. This is a song Reeves and I wrote in 1889. Somebody do it. Heaven.
bodies go to body hell. And I just cough and catch the chase. Switch the channel, watch the police cars. I can't reach it anymore. I just sit back and ignore. Oh, I just can't get it right. I just can't get it right. I can't reach it. I can't reach it. Famous smile. No matter where you run your mile, to be right in that photograph. Andy, where's my 15 minutes? I can't reach it anymore. I just sit back and ignore. I just can't get it right. I just can't get it right. I can't reach it. I can't breathe. Shit.
David Bowie, Reeves Gabrel. We love you both.
Thank you very much.
Reeves Gabrel. On behalf of the WBCN crew, everybody that works there, everybody here at Fort Apache, all our excellent studio audience, and all the audience in the house and out of the house that couldn't make it, once again, thank you, David Bowie and Reed. Pick up the new album. Do yourself a favor. It's called Earthling. You're a moron if you don't get the new album. Do it now. And I said, well, I'll have a party at my house. I'd like to thank our crew tonight. Let's see here. Tonight's show was mixed by Dave Cook of Fort Apache with technical assistance by Dave McLaughlin. Thanks also to Gary Smith and Brian Denson of Fort Apache. And from the record company, hi, Michael Plenn. Thank you very much, Don Hood. Thank you, Jamie Willis. And Patty Norris from Virgin Records. The BCN crew, John Mullaney, Chachi, Jim Rakey, Tony Berardini. And as usual, Oedipus executive producer, I'm Bradley J. Back to the studio. It's been excellent.
You can say that again.
You guys.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that party at Bradley J's house.
I'll bring the chips.